Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti, and today I'm in virtual company of Ivor Ambrose, because today we're talking about ARSA, the Advanced Research Seminar on Audio Description, the 2019 edition that took place from March 19th to the 20th. So, as before, we're going to have the opportunity to chat with the speakers of the conference. And today we have Ivor Ambrose with us, Managing Director of the European Network for Accessible Tourism. So welcome, Ivor. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Well, thank you. And I'm delighted to have this opportunity to say a few words about the conference. I was invited as keynote speaker, which came really out of the blue. I didn't know that there was a research group on audio description. I knew about audio description in a way as a partial user, because I dip into it sometimes to get some enriched information about what's on the video. But I'm working as a consultant in accessibility, and in particular on accessible tourism. And since 2008, I've been the elected managing director of an NGO, a non-governmental organization called the European Network for Accessible Tourism. And I was invited to this interesting research conference, really, to put the issue of accessible tourism in front of the researchers, and maybe to prompt them a little bit to think about other areas of work other than, let's say, live performances in theaters and so on, and in cinema and video, to look at how tourism in general could be more accessible to people with visual impairments. And it made me think a lot about the subject. I hadn't really looked into it before, so this was an opportunity for me to tell these 100 or so very engaged researchers about accessible tourism, and an opportunity for me to learn a lot as well about the very interesting field of audio description.
I have to say that I've talked to people that were attending ARSAD, and you sort of opened a whole world to the one of us talking about accessibility, often at least in the entertainment business, you know, as you said, you know, theater or audiovisual products such as cinema and TV. So the tourist part of it, and how much it can include everybody, was like an epiphany in a way.
Yeah, maybe. Thank you. If it was that amazing, then that's really good. What I found interesting or important to put across to the audience was that in tourism, we obviously, if you're going to provide a good tourism product and good experiences for everyone, you have to look at how people travel, why they travel, and what happens to them when they're traveling. And we've used for many years, and in the tourism sector, many people speak about the visitor journey. So I was explaining, if you think of the visitor journey, not just starting when you leave the house and maybe get on a train or go to the airport, but the visitor journey, it really starts and is completely bound together by information. It starts with information. When people are looking or thinking, where should we go for our next holiday or on this next trip? And you need information all the way through. And information, of course, has to be available, and it has to be accessible. It has to be reliable. It has to be in a format that everyone can appreciate and understand. And so information is the glue that holds everything together, but it's also the barrier if you don't have that information in a format that you need. And so right from the word go, if you have a visual impairment and you are hoping to go on a holiday, say to Portugal, or you're hoping to go even just for a day trip somewhere, you're going to very often look for information on websites. And if they're not accessible, if they're not built in a way that you can browse that website without the use of sight, then you're not going to get the information. And that's another opportunity lost for a business that wants to attract customers, because they're not going to get that customer. So I was showing how on the visitor journey, you have to think about information to the customer when they're browsing, when they're making the choice of where to travel. And then, of course, payment, online payment. Is that accessible? Bookings. And then, of course, then there is the whole chain, as I say, in the visitor journey, the transportation, how to get there, how to get information while you're on the move. And there are many ways to do that nowadays, but they have to be accessible too. And where you're going to stay, the accommodation, what you're going to do there, the attractions and so on. And then also traveling home again, you often need to prepare yourself with more information about how to get back. And finally, when the visitor gets home, or even before they get home, they want to share information with their family and friends about what they're doing. You know, we have the social media as a huge network information to share our experiences. But if people are not able to, let's even say, get on the internet, or they're not given opportunities to send information when they're traveling, then a lot of that, let's say, marketing by word of mouth, it gets lost. That opportunity for the business is lost if people don't have the opportunity to use internet while they're traveling. So there are so many, we call them in marketing, it's called touch points, where the customer is engaged with the supplier, and in this particular respect, in information. And so many of these touch points, they may be also audio points, you know. Some people can hear them and some people can't. So you need to have them in various channels. You need to have information in the channel that suits you. So what I was doing in the presentation really was to explore how many different ways there are to enjoy tourism, but also how many barriers there still are in the tourism sector, because the supply of accessible tourism is very much behind the demand. We've done some research on that, which I also talked about.
Because people would like to travel more, but they can't, because, you know, you talked about the supply, the tourism, the accessible tourist supply chain, and you showed that even if there's one missing point in the chain, it all goes to, let's say, a disaster.
Exactly, it's like we say, the chain is only as strong as the weakest link, and if one of those links in the chain, it could be you're going to visit an attraction or the accommodation is not suitable, and then it can spoil the whole experience. And when we say the weak link is weak in terms of accessibility. So that's a sort of mental image that we have of how accessibility is a chain, and it has to be joined together, and all the parts have to work together. That's something we try to put across to the suppliers. But I think people who are working in audio description understand that quite well, because they're thinking about accessibility, and this was maybe just broadening out the issue a little for them. But the point is that a lot of people with all kinds of disabilities don't travel. Some research has shown that up to 50% of people with disabilities actually don't go on trips because they've had such bad experiences, or it's just too much trouble, or they can't get the information that they need for various reasons besides the cost, which can also be more expensive if you have a disability. You have to pay for additional services sometimes. So there are so many reasons which inhibit people, which hold them back from traveling. And I was pointing out there that we've done some research, and others have done research in this field in the last 3 or 4 years, and it's quite clear that the supply side of accessible tourism is not matching with the demand. Even though there are people with difficulties who can't travel, then we need to also make sure that the suppliers are giving a good offer which is accessible to everyone. In our study for the European Commission in 2014 and 2015, in that study we looked at accessibility as part of the offer on many, many websites. We looked at travel websites across the whole of Europe to see where there were accessible services and accessible environments. And just by browsing these websites and running the statistics, we could say only 10% of tourism suppliers in Europe are actually mentioning anything to do with accessibility. So there's a very long way to go to get this information to the people who need it.
While talking to the people working on accessibility during these years, I noticed that there are two things that people normally, generally don't know, don't want to know. The first is among the facts that you listed in your presentation, and is it that the 70% of disabilities are invisible? The second thing is that people and industries, companies seem to don't understand that the investment costs are not so high. I mean, if you invest generally in accessibility, then there will be a return in the amount of money that you spend, because in this case, there will be more and more people traveling.
Yeah, I think this. There are some kind of stereotypes, if you like, that as soon as you start talking about people with disabilities, a lot of people, a lot of businesses, they think immediately of people who are in wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. And that's also reasonable. There are many people who need a wheelchair to travel and to get around. But actually, from the data that has been collected, and some of the published data from Visit England, for example, shows that of people with disabilities who declare they have a disability when they're traveling in the surveys that they've done, the actual percentage of people with a wheelchair or using a wheelchair is about 6% of all those with a disability. The number of people with some kind of hearing impairment or hearing loss is about 25% of the people with disabilities, and clearly you need to do some work on your service if you're a supplier in the tourism sector. If you have a hotel or if you have a restaurant, there are things you can do to make it possible for people to visit you and to use your facilities. And the most expensive things are usually the changing the infrastructure, changing the buildings, and that would be required for people in wheelchairs. But there are a lot of things you can do that hardly cost anything. For example, having a piece of paper and a pencil handy for people who communicate with sign language. If your staff don't communicate using sign language, then you should have these things on hand, or you should have a tablet or an iPad, something to communicate with. So the most simple things that can be very cheap but effective. And there's a whole host of things that we could talk about there. I mean, there are also so some people have problems if they can't read a menu, or if a blind person can't read a menu. So there are apps nowadays that can read a menu or any kind of text aloud for you. So there are ways around this, and they're not always extremely expensive. There's another part to this issue as well, which is that when a person with a disability is traveling, they most often have a companion with them, a friend or family member who's traveling with them. So for a business, this is also shown through the statistics that it's quite often the case that people would travel with friends and so on. So for people with access needs, let's say, people with disabilities, they travel with, on average, 2.2 companions. And older people over 60 years of age, when they're traveling, they travel also on average with 1.6 companions. So this means that there's an additional person or two coming with that person with a disability. And that means that if your premises, if your services are accessible to that one person, you may get two or three people coming at the same time whereas you would only get one if they weren't with a disability. Mm. So there's a good business, a compelling business argument for making your premises and your services more accessible to more people. And the interesting thing also shown by the Visit England research is that people with disabilities, they stay longer on average than other visitors, and they spend more money on average than other visitors. So many good reasons to focus on this on this market, if you like.
In your presentation, you also talked about European Accessibility Act that was passed in March 2019. What did we obtain, and what's left to achieve?
Yes, this is something that's come to the end now. In the Accessibility Act has been passed by the European Parliament, and it will be signed into as a European directive in April. There's been a long process behind this European Accessibility Act, which has attempted to bring together accessibility requirements that will be written into the laws of all the member states to try to make goods and services accessible to people with disabilities. And this has taken quite a long time. The first mention of an Accessibility Act was as long ago as 2003, when the European Commissioner Anna Diamantopoulou from Greece, she had promised that yes, the Commission will work towards a European Accessibility Act. So 16 years later, we have a European Accessibility Act, which has been passed by the Parliament, but it's not perfect. It's a compromise, as many legal instruments are. The European Disability Forum, which represents the 80,000 people with disabilities in Europe and their families, they are happy to see that the Act includes many important issues to do with accessibility to computers, to smartphones and tablets, and to banking and banking software and payment possibilities, terminals. I'm reading from a list here, of course. Also that there will be access to the emergency 112 number for people with disabilities. So these things are coming into the Act, but there are a lot of things that are left out, which the disability sector was interested to get into the Act and was lobbying very hard to include access to the built environment and access to transport and accessibility in terms of household appliances like refrigerators, washing machines, microwaves. Yeah. And so if they're not going to be accessible in the future to everyone, if they're not universally designed, then that's a big gap. And so there's still more work to do in those areas I just mentioned. And also, the Act is not going to apply to small businesses or micro enterprises. And this was seen as a way of softening the Act, that it might be expensive for small businesses to comply with the requirements. But of course, this is also where a lot of the business is done in Europe. Most of the tourism business in Europe, 90% of tourism businesses are micro enterprises, or small, medium-sized enterprises, I should say. And this is right across the retail sector as well. So personally, I think it's a pity that it fell out this way, that there's not this emphasis on access to the built environment as well in the Act. Because it means, yes, with ICT, with the communications technologies, they're all going to be accessible by law, and that's great in many respects. But you still need to get out of the house. You want to be out there in society and doing things, and can't get out. And if you can't move around, then we haven't got very far, you know.
Now, in these terms, maybe you've even forced to stay home, because in a way, with all, if the IT part is more developed, it's easier to do things online. I mean, but that will prevent you from going outside and enjoying the world.
That could be a consequence. And you could also say that there's a bias towards, let's say, online shopping, because it will be easier for people with disabilities to shop online than it will be to go out. So this could work against small businesses in the end, because people will simply not be there to go shopping and to go down the high street, and there won't be shops in the high street anymore. We're seeing this in some urban areas where it's there's a lot of pressure on the high streets. But basically, there are also some issues concerning the human rights here and the rights of people with disabilities, which are a little bit inconsistent with the act that the European Union and all the member states have signed up to the United Nations Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities to not to be discriminated against in many respects, including tourism. And when it comes to the European Accessibility Act, which should support the implementation of that convention, then I think it falls somewhat short. And so there's still more work to be done, as I said. But we can be happy for the positives that have come out of this act. But I think the work isn't over yet, and it needs to be a very strong area of focus for those in business. And, of course, clearly the disability organizations will continue to be relevant and active in pushing for more accessibility everywhere for everyone.
One last thing, how useful was for you Arsad? What did you discover? What did you learn by meeting all these other accessibility professionals, passionate professionals?
Yes, they're very active and, as you say, passionate group of people. I found it very interesting that they're working in a lot of areas their focus is on, of course, improving the quality of the work and the standards of the work. And we were hearing about some, for example, European-funded projects on improving the quality and improving the profession of audio description as well, audio describers. It's important to have some professional standards and to understand very deeply what it is you're doing when you're providing a text or a spoken explanation of what is happening in a performance in theater, in cinema. You're providing this to people, and there was quite a lot of debate about to what extent you are simply describing as an audio describer or whether you are interpreting what you see. And what sort of cultural differences there are in our interpretations, and maybe everyone has a lot of inbuilt biases towards certain things that they may not be aware of. So that was quite interesting to hear about the research issues in those biases that we may have, and how we may be transferring those to the person who's listening, and maybe they don't want to hear those biases. They want to have a more pure interpretation or explanation of what's going on the film. So that was quite interesting from the sort of technical point of view. But we also came to discuss things like artificial intelligence and machine learning, and how in a sense the development of technology is enabling audio describers to work in different ways to improve the audio description. But at the same time, there's this the usual thing with technology. You can get quite anxious about whether the technology is going to take over from the human beings who are doing this work at the moment, and will be somehow automated so that machines can watch a video or watch a film, and from the pictures that are flicking across the screen, they would use huge databases of interpreted pictures to start explaining for us, for everyone, what's going on. And we know this is at very early stages at the moment, but there are people working on this. I found that quite fascinating to see what are the possibilities, but also what are the threats involved there. But I think the community of researchers there are very aware of these things, and it'll be interesting to see how that develops in the future as well.
So it might be only your first time, but not your last time at Arsad.
Yes, I hope so. Yes, I really do hope so. It was a great event, and it just impressed on me how much work there is to do in this area. And I'm very sure that one of the things I finished off by saying was that we noticed that nowadays some of us have in our homes we have Siri on a computer, or we talk to Alexa. Hey Alexa, what's the weather going to be tomorrow?
Yes,
and Alexa will tell you. You know, so using voice and listening. They say that this is going to be something which is really going to be massive in the online search in the very near future. It could be up to 50% of the way we search, because when people are staring at a very small screen like their smartphone or an interface, it gets very crowded and you can't always do all the searching that you want to do. So it's going to be in many ways easier. And also when you're perhaps driving your car and you want to ask a question, then you're not distracted so much, or you're not taking your eyes off the road. So this audio search is going to be very big, I think. And so somewhere in there, you have to have people who know about audio description so that you can give a good answer to these billions of questions that are going to be fired at all these devices we have in our homes and our offices and in transportation. I think it's going to be an amazing future for audio description.
Thank you so much, Ivor, for being with us, for talking to us about Arsad, your experience and your work in accessibility. I hope it's only the first time on many, on Fred.
Okay, thank you very much. Nice to talk to you, Chiara.
Thank you so much. We've been talking to Ivor Ambrose, Managing Director of the European Network for Accessible Tourism. And this is Chiara Nicoletti for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.